We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. I'm Alex. I'm with Norman, and this is a State of Play podcast that me and Norman do at least once a month for our patrons who pay £8 per month for, well, this week, Norman, it'll be 14 podcasts for patrons, at least 14 podcasts for patrons for just £2. So if you like what we do, if you like the show we listen to, please come and join us. Keeps this show free of charge. You also get every podcast, including this one, without the adverts that you've just heard. And the purpose of the State of Play podcast, Norman, good friend of mine, we talk through Newcastle United, what's been going on, what's been happening. We'll try and take a bit of a deeper look at things if we can, but there's so much to talk about this week that we couldn't just possibly concentrate on the one subject which we had planned to talk about, which was Newcastle United's fabulous performance and decent result against Manchester City at home, 3-3 on Sunday just gone. Before we start talking about that, Norman, let's talk about the news that is going to break either while we're recording or just after, or certainly by tomorrow, which is Friday, and that is Alexander Isak is going to be a Newcastle United player for £60 million, euros, who knows. These are finer details which matter not to me anyway. He's going to be a record transfer. He's going to be a Newcastle United player. How buzzing are you, mate, about that?
Absolutely delighted. The first thing I will clarify is that I'm going to refer to him as Isak, but I'll change that the moment I hear a Swede pronounce his surname. All right, because we all know the reverberations from the Willock pronunciation, Alex. You and I both know that very well. So it's Isak until told otherwise, right? I'm absolutely delighted, mate. The Euros, I thought he was outstanding at certain points. That's the first time he came on my radar, I have to be honest with you. I do follow La Liga to a certain extent. I haven't spent, obviously, quite a few years living over in Spain, but that kind of tailed off with COVID. Football had lost interest a little bit, didn't keep up to date. But I guess if you look at how well Real Sociedad did for a couple of seasons, he obviously seemed to play a pivotal role in that, alongside, of course, former Newcastle United midfielder Mikel Merino. So I am absolutely over the moon. I read a tweet today, somebody saying he cost 10 million more than Erling Haaland, which means literally nothing because it's all to do with contract buyouts, etc. And obviously, as we know, in the Spanish league, there are players have these kind of contract buyout fees that they can go for, and we appear to have met that. And that's the kind of position we're in now as a club, right? Where you go out and maybe the player's worth 50 million, but if it's going to cost an extra 10, 50 million, we'll pay it because we are that club now. However, I've spoken with Beñat Barreto today, who is a journalist, a football journalist. He covers Real Sociedad for the local paper over in the Basque Country, Diario Basco, and he speaks of Isak in very high regard. Obviously, we touch on the fact that last season he maybe wasn't at his best, but the two seasons prior to that, he was fantastic. And I think he leaves Real Sociedad, it appears, with kind of growing references and with the love of the fans very much on his side. So, delighted me. I cannot wait to see him. He offers were something completely different, I think. You know, you've got Callum Wilson in there, who is a wonderful all-round number 9 centre-forward. I think Isak might bring things that Wilson perhaps doesn't have. He's still going to be raw, I don't doubt it, even though he's had a couple of, three seasons in La Liga. He's proven himself over there. He's proven himself for the Swedish national team. But the Premier League is a different matter. You know, we look at how Mikel Merino struggled to adapt, went back to Spain. He's done brilliantly well. So it will take a bit of time, I'd imagine. But in terms of the potential he's got, what I've learned him so far, I mean, he looks like he could be a really fantastic player and one who may well be spearheading Newcastle in the Champions League in a couple of years. And I don't mean that is any sense of exaggeration, mate. That's the kind of signing we're making now, is a signing with an eye on being in the Champions League conversation the next couple of years. Don't doubt it.
Yeah, and can't wait to listen to that conversation on Patreon that you've had there. We're going to try and get as much expert analysis across the Patreon platforms. There's only one Patreon platform. Don't know why I pluralized it. Never mind. It's late. those of you who are with us already, join us for that. Norman and his reach across the globe is supreme in terms of getting guests on to talk about Newcastle United footballers. It's a joy to behold. One of the things which is interesting about this, mate, is Luke Edwards confirmed last night in a Telegraph piece that Callum Wilson is out 3 to 4 weeks. That's a huge blow. Even with this signing, it is still a huge blow. So central is he to Newcastle's success since he signed, but particularly under Eddie Howe. Massive blow that. Been playing really well, first three games of the season. I don't know how much that influenced pulling the trigger on this signing, Luke Edwards, tonight. This is not, Luke Edwards hasn't been on the show for a little while. We'll miss him. Come back, Luke. He's also reported tonight that Newcastle's pursuit of João Pedro is now off. So it looks like it is an either or. People are saying, I think Chris Woff in The Athletic said that Newcastle were chasing three signings from the start of this week to the end of next week when the window closes, and that's one in. Looks like João Pedro is not going to be one of them. So it'd be really interesting to see who else comes in. Of course, lots of players linked. But for me, mate, I think Newcastle have set a really good precedent with the purchase of Bruno Guimarães. And using him as a comparison, Isak is a player who has been well scouted and heavily linked to some of Europe's top clubs. I'm talking Barcelona, Arsenal, Liverpool, and Bruno Guimarães is the same for certainly kind of the last 6 months of his time and last 12 months of his time at Lyon. He wasn't at Lyon very long, but he did really, really well kind of from coming through the door. And I think what Newcastle are doing is we cannot offer European football currently, and we can't offer the wages that the clubs that I've just mentioned there can offer for a number of reasons, both financial, but also the team that Eddie Howe is trying to build, players that aren't on double the rest of the squad, all that kind of thing. And Newcastle are just kind of there lurking. The players that are being consistently scouted by the best clubs in Europe, Newcastle United want to be part of that conversation. And there are very few players. You saw it with Darwin Núñez. Newcastle heavily linked in January to Núñez. Ends up going to Liverpool for mega money and doing something batshit mental in his home debut. Maybe escaped one there. Not very Eddie Howe, is it? Not in the player when 1-0 down. But I'm really impressed that Newcastle are so switched on and tuned into these deals. Make sure that the scouting network, through how the owners, Ashworth, the head scout, whose name always escapes me, and we're there when we're ready to try and kind of pick out the very best players that we can, players that other clubs are seriously looking into. How much do you think Arsenal regret missing out on Bruno Guimarães for a relative snippet, something like £34 million plus add-ons? It's literally nothing in today's transfer fee. I mean, it's half an Alexander Isak, nearly. That's how good a deal it was, and I'm sure he'll do great. But it does kind of show that we're operating kind of in that middle market between, the best of the rest in the Premier League, West Ham and Leicester kind of in particular. I don't think that either of those clubs could pull off this deal. I think Newcastle United are almost like, and I think it was the new Chelsea chairman or owner who said the top six is now the top seven. Kind of a comment that's gone under the radar a little bit. The top six, or the big six, is now the big seven, including Newcastle United. And I think this signing goes a long way to kind of enforcing that belief. And that will be the belief across the rest of these clubs. And I think a signing like this for this kind of money sends a ripple through those clubs as well, that they are going to have to move in the transfer market. Because what a lot of these clubs like to do, I think a lot of these clubs would like to give Isak another season, another few months. He had a good start this season, scored against Barcelona at the weekend. Interesting to know from you, mate, what the conversation you had with the journalist who covers the club said about his kind of drop-off in form last season, because that's kind of been well spoken about since, particularly by fans of other clubs. Like, Arsenal fans are out on social media saying, oh, he's shit. Same as they said about Bruno. And he was in such well-regarded stock season 2021 that I think season 21-22 is probably the reason he's coming to Newcastle rather than going to one of those super clubs.
Possibly the impression I got, I mean, the answer that he gave really alluded to the fact that it was more just a confidence issue, a dip in confidence for a period of time. That wasn't necessarily just Isak, by the way. That was the whole really the Real Sociedad squad, you know, because they had performed particularly well for a couple of seasons prior to that. And I think they just dropped off. And the thing is, you have to put it in the context of a club like Real Sociedad, right? That they have a couple of years where, they push for Europe maybe. I mean, you know, you look back in the 80s, they won a couple of leagues. But I'm talking over the last sort of 15, 20 years. And this happens in Spain with a lot of clubs. It happens with clubs like Athletic Bilbao, for example. They'll have a couple of good seasons. Some of that players will really shine. And then, you know, you have to look at the whole part of the team. And eventually there's a little bit of a drop-off because maybe the players in that team aren't quite the quality of Isak or aren't quite the quality of Mourinho. And that affects the individually brilliant player can't just maintain this outrageous form if, you know, the rest of the team aren't kind of maintaining the levels that they have for a couple of seasons. So the impression I got is that it was just a confidence thing that he really didn't necessarily get the kind of chances that he was getting the previous season. And he said it's not anything to do with his ability dropping off. It didn't seem to be a desire issue. It's just more of a psychological lack of confidence. I think it's almost, I got the impression that it was.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
He's ready for that change. He needs that new challenge, right? He scored 16 goals, I think, in his first season, 17 goals in his second season, which is a really good figure for La Liga, and six last season. I don't think he's turned into a bad player overnight. I just think he needs a new challenge and he needs to be surrounded. In order to take him up to the next level, he needs to be surrounded by players who are at the next level, and I think Newcastle have got that.
Yeah, and I mean, 6'3", some real height in there. I don't think he uses his height, but, you know, probably in La Liga as well as we would expect a 6'3" centre-forward to. But he certainly seems to fit the mold of kind of, you know, fast, skillful players that Eddie Howe wants, players that can implement Howe's pressing system, can win the ball high up the pitch and put pressure on defenders and also do the business in the penalty area, as well as being able to drift wide and interchange a little bit with the rest of the front three. So just really excited, mate. And I put a tweet out today basically saying it's less than 1 year since we wouldn't pay the loan fee for Hamza Choudhury. Seems like it was a different life, mate. They were different people supporting a different football club.
Well, interestingly, I was talking with someone today and I was comparing the signing of Isak and really all the signings that have happened since the new ownership took over. And I got thinking about the Loic Remy deal, if you remember all those years ago, 2014, I think it was, for the 14-15 season, or 13-14. I can't remember. 13-14. I do try and block quite a bit of that out. But Loic Remy, if you remember, he was linked for ages. I think, in fact, he was linked in the January transfer window of the previous season, and it just went on and it went on and it went on. And eventually, it's almost as if every single option for Remy had been exhausted by his agent. And he was like, right, this is just Newcastle left standing, mate. You're going to have to take the deal. And he did, compared to what it is now, where it's like not one of us had this Isak on our radar until 48 hours ago. I mean, 24 hours ago. 20 hours. The tweet that I got sent over the phone saying Newcastle on the verge of signing Alexander Isak, I was like, where the hell did that come from? That's the difference now, right? It's the club are just doing business. They're doing business behind, you know, behind doors. They're not letting these leaks out. I mean, you know, João Pedro, you could argue, went on for about a week, but ultimately it's not like, as I say, this kind of dragged out, protracted negotiation where we're offering them, like, you know, 50% less than they actually want. It's like, we want Isak, we're going to go to him, we're going to pay the release clause, boom, deal's done in 24 hours. What a difference.
Yeah, and that a lot of the business Newcastle have done this summer has been like that. Nick Pope was kind of done as soon as they're almost kind of being linked or leaked once they're actually here. They're at the training ground doing the medical. And it's great to see, and it does make you think about a lot of the other targets and, you know, links that are out there in the press. Whilst I'm sure there's some validity to a lot of them, I really do enjoy the way that the club are doing their business right now. The kind of undercover, it's kind of, if you're hearing about it to this level, then it's done. And it's just a great time to be a Newcastle fan. And let's move on, mate, to the game on Sunday, which neither me or you were at. Both watched it from afar, but there's a lot to talk about it. Obviously, the lads, Adam, Ben, Si, did a great job in the podcast Sunday just gone. But me and Norman both messaged each other base at the same time, saying we've got to do a deeper dive in this. We've got to do a state of play podcast on this performance and on this game. Where would you like to start, mate, on this fixture? What do you want to say?
Wow, well, that's a question, because there's so many areas to focus on. We won't have time to go through everything we want to talk about, I'd imagine. But first and foremost, what I would, I guess, focus on is the fact that we went a goal down very early on against Man City. And for the first time, I think, in God knows how many years, definitely for the first time since Man City got their massive investment back in, what, 08, 09, we've got a goal down to them. And I've genuinely thought, it doesn't matter because we can come back here. And we did. And my God, but it wasn't even, Alex, it wasn't even like we conceded a goal after 5 minutes and it was heads down. I think, was the goal we conceded against them last season, was that a Kieran Clarke era, perhaps, that let them score very early on? Yeah. And at that point, even last season, you're thinking, we're probably done now. You look at you actually look at the 11 that we had out that day compared to the 11 that we had out on Sunday. You look at how long Eddie Howe had been in charge by the point he'd been in charge by Sunday. You look at just the absolute and utter transformation in, what, 9 months? It's been so huge that we went to go down to Man City, and I genuinely didn't feel that known sensation in the pit of my stomach that, oh, that's probably it now, isn't it? I thought we had a goal and we're, and mate, it's just the way we came back, instantaneous. We absolutely pressed them from the moment we conceded that goal, and we're going to find out details. Obviously, you'll put more questions to us and there'll be more to talk about, but what I will say to you is that for the, what, 50 minutes, I would say, after we conceded that first goal, that's probably in my lifetime the best I've ever seen a player. And I'm not exaggerating. The reason, you know, everything's to do with context, right? So obviously, I saw performances from Newcastle United under Kevin Keegan that were magnificent, right? We tore teams apart. You could argue under Dalglish there were a couple, i.e. Boston under home, for example. Under Robson, certainly there were some fantastic performances. But the context was completely different. Those Newcastle United sides, especially the Keegan Robson ones, were expected to be at the top end of the table. They were at the top end of the table. They had been decent sides for one, two or three seasons. We've gone from being this absolute clapped out three-wheel Robin line of a football club trying to race against Ferraris to being like a Ferrari ourselves within the space of 9 or 10 months. So that for me is why it was so good. But even then, I actually look at what was going on the pitch, the intensity that we attacked. One of the best football teams in the world, by the way, a team that's won the title four times out of the last five seasons in England. We attacked them. We dominated them with a skill and with a kind of an organisation and a desire that I don't recall seeing all these factors coming in at once. It was absolutely phenomenal. I know it wasn't for 90 minutes, right? I know I might sound like Steve Bruce where we play well for 20 minutes, but we were dominating one of the best teams in the world for 50 minutes of this game, bullying them out of the game, mate.
It was extraordinary to watch, and you know what people, if you listen to this, if you've got a season ticket, you go to games and you try and pick games to go on holiday. I picked this game thinking, oh, it's Man City. I've got to change my mindset to not make such an error, because fuck me, watching Kieran Trippier's go live must have been some experience. You are absolutely right in everything. There's lots of different things I could pick out to agree with you and extend on them, and like you say, we can't do it also. I want to talk about three key moments in this game that I just have so much respect for Eddie Howe for in particular. That respect when I talk about Eddie Howe. If Eddie Howe was on this podcast, which would probably never happen, or he was speaking to the press, he's always keen to point out any praise towards him should be directed at the players, the coaching staff, the owners, everyone. So I'm giving Eddie Howe praise here because he's the manager. I'm sure it goes beyond Eddie Howe and the players deserve credit. But there are three main things I want to pick out in terms of key moments that kind of signify the strength of change of direction that this football club has undergone. And you've picked out one of them, which was 5 minutes when you go 1-0 down. But I'll go before that. And there was some discussion last week, and I asked a question on social media to people saying, I put to people, it will be very interesting to see how we approach this game tactically, whether it's more of Arsenal at home, more of just what you would say is template Eddie Howe, Newcastle United, press high, press hard, play a reasonably high line, try and win the ball high up the pitch, leave gaps in behind so you're potentially vulnerable. But that gamble, as we've seen against Forest, as we've seen against lots of teams, but particularly that Arsenal game at the end of last season was kind of the template of like, well, if we can reproduce this next season, we will be a seriously good side. And that's probably been the basis of my belief that we'll push the top six this season.
Alex here, you know that you've just been listening to me on the main podcast, as well as our usual ads this week. I'm going to try and sell you or convince you to click a link at the bottom for NordVPN. First time I've ever done anything like this, but you know what, Newcastle are class, why not? Anything is possible, particularly if you compare where we were 12 months ago when we couldn't afford Hamza Chowdhury's loan fee. Okay, NordVPN, are you missing out on your favourite show because it's not available in your region? Do you want to improve your overall internet security? Well, you should give NordVPN a try. Using the link at the bottom of the description of this podcast on your podcast listening app, you're going to receive a huge discount on a 2-year plan with one free month. As we all know, privacy is a massive deal these days. NordVPN keeps your information encrypted, so you never have to worry about your IP or your location getting out. They've also doubled down on keeping you safe with their new threat protection feature, which protects you from intrusive website ads and malware. Even if you download an infected file, threat protection kicks in and deletes it before it makes a mess of your computer. There is literally no risk to you with their 30-day money-back guarantee. Give it a try, and if you like it, champion. If you don't, they'll issue a refund, and you can pretend the entire situation never, ever happened. Check out the link in the description of this podcast and get your subscription started today.
From minute one, Newcastle United did it. Now, the opening seconds of the Forest game, we kind of forced through our press and we forced a corner. The opening seconds of this game, one of Man City's players kind of slices the ball out for a throw, and you're thinking, fuck me, we're up for this. This isn't just going to be... what I put on social media was, you know, how's it going to go? And a lot of the responses, quite reasonably, were saying, you can't press this team. This is Manchester City. You have to get men behind the ball. You have to play five at the back. You have to change your formation. You have to drop ASM. You have to do all these things. And no one is more wrong about football than I am. But that approach, Eddie Howe could have done any of those things. And Eddie Howe was thought, as a man who had lost every single Premier League match against Man City up to that point, every single one, that would scar some managers. The beatings he has taken at the hands of both that club and that manager, Guardiola, at the hands of those players, at the hands of Kevin De Bruyne. 5-0 last, 9-0 on aggregate last season. To come out minute one and do that with all of that context, that is extraordinary to me. And I don't think there's been enough made of the absolute balls it takes to do something like that.
Now, Newcastle,
the self-belief. Newcastle have got good players, but they don't have better players than Manchester City. Probably in any position. Probably. As much as we love these guys, it's very hard to make that case, probably. And to face up to that team and think, we are going to make life difficult for you in your half of the pitch. We're not just going to defend well, defend deep and defend in numbers and make it difficult in that respect. And Man City don't really find that difficult, let's be honest. They probably want teams to play like that. And to do that from minute one, it just takes so much. And he did it last season against Man City at home. And we on this podcast and lots of other people praised him despite defeat 4-0. The fans in that game stayed behind the team because, yes, it went tits up, but it was so obvious what we're trying to do. This was like that times 100. And regardless of the outcome of that game, I watched that in the first minute and thought, you know what, this is a manager who like you say, who trusts his players, who's got a style of play, it will backfire at times. We will probably take some beatings at home. Because if Man City go two up in that situation, it becomes very, very hard, doesn't it? But we didn't. They didn't go two up. We made a couple of saves, Norman.
That's an interesting point you make about taking some beatings at home. But I look at it like this. Man City are the best team in England now. And I think by quite a stretch, actually. I think Liverpool's start of the season, obviously, they'll improve. But I still think there's something not 100% there. I think you look around at other teams, Arsenal are doing well, etc. Spurs under Conte are maybe the only team who, you know, if we played like that against Spurs at home, Conte on the counter, they could give a bit of a beating. But that was Man City at home and we didn't lose them. I think most teams we play like that against at home would probably get something. So I don't see these beatings happening. Maybe I'll be completely wrong, mate. You can replay this to us. But at the moment, I think that that's the template for home matches against most teams, and I think we'll probably get quite a lot of points. And also, you look at our home record since Howe took over, since the turn of the year. I mean, have we lost?
Liverpool. And I was going to talk about the Liverpool game, but just to come back at you there, I don't think we'll lose this game. Mate, we're going to win every home game. We're fucking class. You see, we're against City. But by definition, by opening yourself up more, by leaving space in behind, by leaving space in midfield like we do, the possibility at least rises that these very, very good teams, particularly in the counter-attack, will harm you. And the strength of Manchester City's chances on Sunday prove that. But we also had chances, and it's a balancing act. But for him to do that from minute one, an extraordinary decision, an incredible belief, and such trust that he has in the players to deliver what he's asking, I don't think, maybe apart from Liverpool and Arsenal, the only two teams, I think, in the league, three teams now, including Newcastle, would face Man City like that. I genuinely believe that. You watch Spurs, you watch Chelsea, you watch Man United against Man City. The setup like we would under Bruce against them with better players, and maybe they're a little bit higher up the pitch. It's extraordinary. I'm so proud of them. That's before we get into the match. Minute five goal, 1-0 down, and it's a poor goal between Trippier and Shaw between them. It's a poor goal, and for heads not to go down. For them to continue the game plan, for them to continue forcing Manchester City backwards. Manchester City, not a team used to passing the ball backwards. Again, extraordinary. Third point, and Eddie Howe said this in a post-match press conference, was that he said, what do you say to the players at halftime? And he said, keep pressing, keep pressing. So he's come at halftime, 2-1 up, and Newcastle come out in the second half and are, again, miles better than the opposition for a short period, albeit. And again, I'm not sure we've seen something like this in English football for a long time. And by that, I mean the fact that Newcastle, player for player, are much worse than Manchester City. I can't think of another team that have approached a fixture against them like this in this era, or against Arsenal under Wenger. I would go back before that because football was a little bit different. Or against Klopp's Liverpool. You know, maybe Southampton at times, maybe Brighton, maybe. But I don't think so. I don't think so in the same manner to press as hard and as high up the pitch. It's just something I've never seen before. And I'm so proud of them for doing it. I'm so pleased that there was reward for that approach. And let's face it, this is a game when Newcastle were denied a Stonewall penalty. When the centre forward went off injured pretty early on, I'd say two of Manchester City goals had a large slice of fortune. Definitely the third goal. People talk about a great pass from Kevin De Bruyne. It takes a huge deflection of Joe Willock to land perfectly for the Manchester City player to score. So I just kind of think if you ignore the result and you ignore Trippier's free kick in the context of this conversation, what Newcastle United did in this fixture is it's just something that isn't really happening in the Premier League. And whilst our detractors would throw at us now with Isaac a £200 million spend, that doesn't get us halfway to what Manchester City's teams cost. It doesn't get us halfway. Newcastle's wage bill isn't halfway to what Manchester City's wage bill. And to do that and approach that game like they did, despite those disadvantages, is just something we haven't really seen from the rest of this league. And Eddie Howe is proving to teams that if you train well enough and you train hard enough and you improve enough, that you can play Fabian Scher, cost £3 million. Nick Pope, fantastic, £10 million. These are not the signings that were thrown at us that were kind of mocked as a support. Or, you know, you think you're going to sign Neymar or X, Y, and Z. I don't think any Newcastle fan realistically thought I don't want Nemo. I want Nick Pope for 10 million quid. I want Dan Byrne playing left back out of position and putting in that performance. I want Alan Saint-Maximin, who many people said would be dropped, putting in probably the best individual performance against Manchester City outside of a Liverpool player for a long, long time. So I've eulogised a lot there, mate, about the setup and about the approach. I don't know if there's anything you want to say in particular about that or something else.
No, you've covered that fantastically well. I think you mentioned players there. I want to see a £40 million forward who basically didn't look like you could play forward at all turn into one of the best midfielders in the country. I thought Julian was absolutely out of this world again. That's down to coaching. It's down to the fact that Julian's always been given a load of confidence and there's clearly a natural ability there. And it's taken Eddie Howe to come in and look at the raw materials that Julian's got and thought, you know what, actually, you're going to be better here and more effective here. And that's exactly what's happened. A couple of individual performances to pick out as well as Julian. Joe Willock, who I think in the first couple of minutes, he put a couple of ragged passes in. He looked a little bit off the pace. And then all of a sudden, we break out. And on the left-hand side, he absolutely rinses. He rinsed Kyle Walker in that one particular run that he made on that left-hand side of the pitch. And, you know, we saw it last season, didn't we, Willock? He's got this burst of speed, this confidence to break through. He did it against Leicester last season, which resulted in a last-minute winner for injury time winner for Bruno. He did it against Fulham away at the back end of the season that he was on loan when he basically ran the full length of pitch. And it's that confidence that a player like Willock has to do that and the fact that he's been developed by Howe. And I look at it now and I think to myself, you know, we've got players on the pitch who have got the, you know, the self-belief to attack players like Kyle Walker, to attack Man City and to take them on. I mean, ASM, we know has always had that confidence, but for me, it's the self-belief in those kind of players that you thought mightn't be, you know, necessarily as good as what we thought they were, or they might just be that level below. No, I'm seeing performances out of these players now that are making me think, actually, at the start of the season, I was thinking to myself, you know, I'm looking at you, I'm with you, I'm seeing, oh, I think we'll get sixth. But, you know, there was a little bit of kind of hyperbole attached to it, a little bit of that pre-season hopefulness, because I thought we are weak in certain areas. The players that we love on the pitch maybe aren't at that level. But I'm looking at them now and I'm thinking to myself, well, why the hell not? I mean, you mentioned players that Man City have, you know, none of ours would get in their team necessarily. Well, I tell you what, I'd rather take any of our centre-backs over Nathan Aki. So there's one, right? You know, it's not like, yes, Man City are better than us, but I look at the rest of the Premier League and I just think to myself, actually, these players are probably even better than I thought they were. And I think, you know, that Willock, as I say, was one of them. Certainly, obviously, Joelinton. Dan Byrne, you mentioned there. I thought Dan Byrne was sensational. And don't get me wrong, when we first signed him, I was delighted because I thought he's a Geordie, he's done well at Brighton, he's been playing for Potter for a couple of years. But I think he's even gone on a level since he got a Newcastle mate. And I look at them and I get the impression that they all seem to want to improve. And we've got a load of leaders on the pitch as well, but obviously a special mention does have to go for Kieran Trippier because he has just been sensational since he got here. And also, I thought his captaincy on Sunday was clearly brilliant. You know, as you say, he was involved in the goal that Man City scored, that misunderstanding between him and Shea, but because he's so good, that won't affect him at all. It wouldn't have affected him at all. We saw the performance he put in. He put in a slightly dubious challenge, which was fun, obviously, while it lasted, how it transpired, but he was brilliant. And just finally, mate, I want to talk about Nick Pope because we did a podcast with Mike Burnley fan pre-season when we signed Pope. And he said, what you're going to see is somebody who can read a game very well but makes so many saves without actually using his hands. It's untrue. And what did he do on Sunday? He's saving. The saves that he makes with his legs are fantastic. And also what he does is he just gets play moving incredibly quickly as well. And he's professional. You know, he took a fall at one stage when Man City were putting the pressure on. I think they maybe scored the second or the equaliser, and he just feigned a bit of injury for a few minutes to kill time. You know, this experience that we have in that team now, coupled with the ability, coupled with the excellent management of Howe, it's dead exciting, mate. It really is. I mean, I cannot wait to go to Wolves on Sunday, and I can't remember ever saying I can't wait to go to Wolves.
Yes, and full Wolves preview uploaded tonight, actually, on our Patreon platform for people wanting a deeper dive into that fixture taking place on Sunday afternoon. Player I want to talk about, mate, is ASM. Very interesting player. A couple of things have come out recently. One, Craig Hope's reported in the Mail that he wants a new contract. Only signed a new six-year deal in 2020, so that might be difficult for him. You can imagine he was probably the best paid player at the club there alongside Callum Wilson. That might not be the case now after recent acquisitions. And It's a really hard conversation about ASM because at different stages of his Newcastle career, he has been different things to different people. So he goes through the stage of being like fairly injury prone first season, but you know, incredible output. He then starts last season under Bruce, very, very well. Responsible for goals that kind of just keep Newcastle in touch. But I don't know what Bruce had 3 points from 8 games when he left. All 3 points pretty much down to one man, and that's ASM. And as Newcastle have improved, his output has waned, and that's led to questions about his ability, but also his personality. If you look at signing a player for 20 million quid, the output that he's given us, both in terms of assists, goals, and general approach to play and general value for money and watching play football, he's been an absolutely sensational signing. He's been a brilliant signing. One thing that has to be said about Newcastle, and I hope it continues, of course, but you know, over the past few years, there have been some bad players, but really, you know, Joe Linton, Fabian Shaw, ASM, Callum Wilson, Miguel Almiron, I'll throw in there for something like 16 million quid. Fantastic signings at this level to be able to compete at the Premier League at the level they are for the money they were bought at. They've been superb signings, and I'll throw ASM in there. I kind of feel, and I'm not going to disagree with Kieran Trippier, because how dare I do such a thing? You know, when he talks to ASM and he talks on camera about more consistency, he's right, particularly in terms of output. I do feel a little bit bad for ASM that people want him to produce what he produced on Sunday more often. And the reason for that is quite simple. When we play Nottingham Forest, at times in the second half, and he was still a key attacking player who got shots off, he got crosses in, he won corners, he's got five lads around him. You try doing some of the five lads around you, it's very difficult. Doesn't mean he can't do better, doesn't mean he should score and assist more. I think he does for his talent and the team he's played in. Man City first half and start of the second half gave him the freedom of the pitch. Yes, he has to rinse Kyle Walker repeatedly, and he does that, so that's well done to the player, because you can only beat the man in front of you. But really, he's consistently left one-on-one against his fullback. It just happens so rarely in other games in James's Park. As Newcastle go 3-1 up in that second half, ASM consistently has 4 or 5 players around him, which is a victory, by the way. That's a victory for the player, it's a victory for Howard, it's a victory for Newcastle United in terms of forcing Pep Guardiola Man City side to do that. But it's going to be very hard for ASM to produce that kind of performance, that kind of scintillating, team-destroying performance that he did to Man City, because teams allocate so much resources to him. The good news for him and us is that the better we get and the better players that we sign, it's going to be harder and harder to do what Forest did and stick 5 around them, or do what Man City did and stick at least 3 around them in possession in the second half. So I agree with Trippier, and I thought it was really telling that Trippier talked about that Everton game at in February last season, crucial victory at home that were won. Trippier played that night, scored a free kick, but also it was probably the last time that we saw ASM in full flow like we did on Sunday. Everton left him free, but that's just bad management by Everton's manager and Everton's team, because they were in the relegation zone at the time, I think. Bit of a madness to do that. So great to see ASM do so well, and he was fucking brilliant. But I just want to be cautious about saying, yeah, do it every week, mate. Because if the opposition are going to devote a lot of resources to doing that, it's almost impossible to do that every week. Doesn't mean he needs to improve his goal and assist ratio, because he's capable of doing it. That cross for Almiron, the equaliser, wow, what a cross. What an absolutely brilliant cross with his right foot. Be very interesting to see who we sign, if we sign another player for the left side this window, because there is a school of thought that ASM should move across to the right and cross a lot more. Wilson would certainly perform more crosses. Izak, I don't know. Never seen the bloke play. I don't know if you want to say anything on ASM, mate.
No, he makes some very good points. I think the fact that he does usually have 3, 4, 5 players around him at times, you know, it does stop him doing what he wants to do. He can't take out 3 or 4 players in one move. I mean, we've seen him do it sometimes, obviously. But obviously, what that does is it frees up space for other players, right? So if we are playing teams at home that we're expected to beat, and the reality is we're in a position now where we're going to be expected to win most of our home games, right? We're going to start those games as favourites to win that game. And other teams are going to look at the team and think, well, we need to stop ESM for a start. So we're going to have to put three players on them, basically. That's what they're doing. And that's going to open up space for, as you see, the higher quality players we're bringing in. You've got Bruno coming through from midfield, Willock, Joe Linton. Obviously, we know he can do box-to-box role. Almiron, who, look, there's a lot of criticism of Almiron. We know that, right? He can't finish. He can't score with his right foot. You know, he had a great chance on Sunday from another ESM ball, I believe, actually, when he should have put the ball in the back net. He came through and skied it. But even freeing up more space for players like Almiron, because there's this focus on ESM, we're going to score goals without ESM being directly involved. If you see, anyways, if you dial the clock back a couple of years under the previous manager, for example, we just couldn't score goals without ESM. It's as simple as that. That's no longer an issue now. So they can put two or three players on him if they want. They're just going to get damaged elsewhere. And again, teams will probably start working that out as we get better. They'll think, well, actually, we can't dedicate all these resources to one player because they can hit anywhere on the pitch. So, you know, you're going to see, with a higher level of player coming into Newcastle, you're probably going to see eventually better performances from ESM as well because he won't have those three players marking him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, mate. And let's move it on then to kind of what is to come. I think the point is really important on Sunday. And me and you, I know for sure, would still be doing this podcast, still eulogising about that performance and the approach. Had Man City got a 90th minute winner. I don't think it changes too much. But I think it's important. It keeps us unbeaten. Two very tough games coming up now. Wolves away and Liverpool away. You'll be at both. For True Faith, and Newcastle currently sixth in the league, 5 points from the three games, only 2 points behind Manchester City. It's a really interesting position to be in, and there's like we've talked loads about what Newcastle should be aiming for this season, about what fan perception is, what the perception of the club and the players could and should be. Has Newcastle's start to the season, mate, both in terms of these three games and performances and results, altered or amended your expectation for the season moving forward?
It's reinforced it. I think the performance against Brighton wasn't the best, but we didn't lose. I think looking at teams in the Premier League at the moment, I actually think Brighton are going to surprise a lot more people. That's kind of what they do, right? They've improved season on season. So a 0-0 draw there for me was a good result, despite elements of the performance. I thought against Forest, we were absolutely superb. And, you know, I think the initial reaction from quite a few pundits, you know, from maybe certain people on social media was, well, it's only Forest. And we've seen since actually that Forest aren't as bad as what people maybe thought. And I think that was something that we discussed pre-season. They're not a bad side. We demolished them. 2-0 wasn't a fair reflection of the game. It should have been a lot more. And the performance against Man City was sensational. We are looking at this, mate, as none of the positives have surprised me. None of them. So I'm looking at it now thinking, what I was feeling pre-season wasn't hyperbole, wasn't that misty-eyed optimism you get pre-season. It was like, no, I'm looking at what's in front of me and we've got a very good squad, a very good first 11, an excellent manager and a crowd that at home games, especially, I mean, Man City, for example, just the positivity, it must have an impact, right? It must have an impact on what's going on the pitch. There is so much positivity there. And I'm convinced that we'll finish top eight. And if we finish top six, I'll be delighted. But at the same time, I won't be massively surprised. This is going to blow back my face, isn't it? It really is.
No, it's not, mate. No, it's not. You've got to embrace it. You've got to embrace Newcastle. Exactly. Are a good side. They're a good football team for the first time in a long time. There's pressure on the players still. You know, Wolves and Liverpool, it is not inconceivable that Newcastle end up with 0 points, whether it be refereeing, we could just have a bad day at the office.
Wolves, but deep down, you think we will?
I think we'll get 4 points. I really do. Liverpool, fortunately for Liverpool, they've got probably the best fixture they could hope for, apart from Forest at home this weekend, and that's Bournemouth at home, and that will give them enough of, I imagine they'll win that by several goals despite their recent troubles, and they'll bounce into us. But let's see how we get on with Wolves. Wolves have had a difficult start, but then put in a much better performance at Spurs at the weekend. They look much, much better. So it's just a really interesting couple of games. This is, I'll come to you in a sec, pal, this is what good teams have to do. You've got to back up your performances with another good performance and another good performance after that. It's not okay to be a kind of one in two side. You have to be at it every single game because the Premier League is relentless and you don't want to... Like, if we lose at Wolves, you're squandering that point at Brighton. You're squandering battling out 3-3 with Man City against the referee and against Wilson's injury, pal.
I completely agree. I look at the Liverpool game and right now, my instinct is that we might lose that attack game. Look, I'm going there with a lot more hope than I have in a long time, but ultimately I'm looking at this Wolves game as being more important for maintaining this excellent start of the season and getting 3 points there. And I was on a Wolves podcast yesterday and I asked the lad, I've done an opposition view, anyway, with the very same podcast for listeners that went out today. And I thought Wolves were terrible towards the end of last season. I thought the form was spinning over into this season, looking at the fact that they haven't won any games. They've only picked up 1 point. They're struggling to score goals. The same old problems. But the lad was actually saying that they've improved. They've improved the squad and he seemed to be very confident. But for the first time in God knows how many years, I didn't really care about Wolves in that sense. I didn't actually care about how good they might be because I'm looking at this fixture thinking, you know what? On paper, we're better than you. Our form is better than yours. I'm not worried about you. You should be worried about us. And I genuinely feel we can go to Wolves and get the 3 points. It'll be a tight game, but I can't see why we shouldn't be looking at that game as 3 points. The Liverpool game, whatever happens, happens. You know, you put it to bed if we lose it, if we get something brilliant. But Wolves, I think, is a big game. And I think getting something out of it is actually quite important.
I agree. Despite the signing of Isak, if Callum Wilson had been fit for both of those fixtures, I'd feel more confident because, like, so important is he. It's a big one for Chris Wood. Whether he starts, I don't know. Wilson's loss, if it is for 2 to 4 weeks, it's still a huge loss. It's a massive loss, mate.
Wilson's a massive loss. And mentioning the Wolves podcast, the lad Sam asked me about Wilson because he's an England fan, Sam, and he basically said, I don't think there's a better number 9 in England other than Kane, and even then, that's debatable when Wilson's firing on all cylinders. And he asked about the injuries and I said I fully expect him to get injured less because he's at a new club with different conditioning, etc. But obviously look at his record at Bournemouth and he did suffer quite big bad injuries at Bournemouth as well. And the fact that he's out injured again, it is a concern. And I think Isak coming in was absolutely vital now if you look at it because we really do need, unfortunately, to think about the possibility of Callum Wilson being out for quite big chunks of the season. It might not happen, but looking at his historical injury record, looking at the fact that he's just gone out again after having a full pre-season as well, by the way, I know this is, you know, it's all bad luck would have played its part, no doubt, but at the same time, yes, I feel that his injury record is a bit of a concern and I just hope to God that Isak can hit the ground running because if Wilson's injured, as you say, it could cause big issues. But you know what? We've just spent 70 million quid on a Swedish international who's been compared to Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I mean, it's not that bad, is it?
We'll leave it there, pal. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks to everybody for listening. We really appreciate it. If you like the podcast that me and Norman have just done, we'll do at least one of these every single month, just a chat between me and him. Like I said, there's probably going to be 15 podcasts this week alone on Newcastle United. It's a lot to listen to. You don't have to listen to them all. If you sign up on Patreon, it's £8 a month, £2 a week, but you get access to like the 1,200 podcasts on Patreon as well that we've done since 2018 if you want to go and make yourself really miserable by listening to some of the dark times in the past, also some of the good times too, though. So thanks very much, Norman. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We're back with the True Faith Free podcast Monday when we'll speak to Norman about his trip to Wolves. Cheers.